For more than 9 decades, Amelia Earhart's name has been spoken with reverence and wonder. A flight path etched deep into the world's imagination, and a disappearance that keeps us chasing echoes of her last sunrise over the Pacific. When I first started out on this journey so long ago, I was filled with optimism. Early in the project, I reached out to a woman who wrote one of my very favorite Earhart books ever written. I never thought she'd say yes, but I was surprised a lot in those early days. She's an award-winning historian whose work has helped broaden our understanding of women's history, power, and the stories we tell about those who defy gravity, both literal and figuratively. But what happens when we step off the edge of the known, and we begin to look at the woman behind the myth? Not only the aviator who vanished, but the human being whose choices, context, and legacy ripple through gender, memory, and cultural terrain that often resists simplification. In her writing, tonight's guest doesn't just recount events. She situates them in the emotional landscape of their time, inviting us to confront not only what we remember, but why we remember it at all. In December 2017, she made her Chasing Earhart debut. 9 years later, she returns to the show to discuss the latest developments in the Amelia Earhart case, for which there are many, and to remind us all what the story has always been about. Welcome back to Chasing Earhart. From Hoptiken, New Hampshire, this is Susan Ware. And we are live. Susan Ware, thank you for coming on the show. It's been so long since we did that initial interview.
Yeah, it does seem like a while ago, but you've been busy since then.
I have been busy, yes. It's been a very long road. Still Missing came out in 93?
It did. And, you know, I'm rather amazed that here I am more than 30 years later, still talking about Amelia Earhart, still talking about a book I wrote. And I think that's just a perfect example of the ongoing fascination with her life and the kind of, it's not timeliness, but there is a way that she continues to speak to people who are just learning about her, to people like you who know everything there is to know about her, and everybody in between. Yeah. And one of the things that it reminds me as a historian is, you know, you better choose your subjects wisely, because if you're going to be talking about them for 30 years, you better like them and have something to say. But I was so lucky when I chose Earhart as a subject more than 30 years ago. And I suspect you feel the same way about what drew you to doing this podcast and the journey that it has taken you on. So I feel like we're kind of kindred souls here.
Yeah, we sure are. Well, the book we're talking about, for those who have been living under a rock for the last 3 decades, the book is called Still Missing, Amelia Earhart and the Search for Modern Feminism. We'll, of course, link it in tonight's show notes. We spoke early, as we talked about into this podcast. December of 17 was our original discussion. So wow. It's been some time. I was deep, deep into this at the time. And of course, a lot has changed since then. It feels like a lot has unfolded in a very short amount of time. We had the Earhart George Putnam Lori Gwynne Shapiro biography drop just a few months ago earlier in the year. We'll get to that here shortly. On the disappearance side of things, we have multiple active investigations going on. Purdue has now joined the search, and officially, as my audience likes to say, they picked a side. And our sitting president, we'll talk about this a lot, just not too long ago ordered the U.S. government to dump the Earhart files. My first question, Susan, is what in the world is going on?
Well, I think part of it is linked to this strange political moment we're in, where conspiracy theories and unsolved mysteries have even more purchase than usual. And people think, oh, well, there must be things we haven't been told, and let's get to the bottom of it, and are things being hidden? And Amelia Earhart is a perfect person. She's almost like a cipher, because you can read into her and her disappearance and what we're learning about it now, whatever you really want to. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really what's going on. At the same time, you have books of serious historical research and scholarship like Shapiro's. And she spent years working on that book. I remember meeting with her before the pandemic. You've got these multiple things going on, but I think it just speaks to the ongoing fascination with her and her disappearance, especially her disappearance.
Well, and we don't really talk too much about politics on the show. We try to keep it, aside. So we'll isolate it for a moment. But for a long time, people heavily involved in this case have been calling for a release of whatever the government may or may not have when it comes to Amelia Earhart, Fred Noonan, the disappearance, pick your topic. Now that a sitting president has made the call and the files are starting to be released, we've had, one set dump and then another set came out. Does it just make this more of a breeding ground for conspiracy theory to run wild? Like, is it kind of out of control now?
Well, I don't know if it's out of control, it's out of our control. There's nothing we can do about that. In a rational world, the release of more material and data should put to rest many of these questions rather than fueling the theories and the suggestions of things still being missing and whatever. I'm not so sure that it will. I do remember back when I was doing my research and remember that I started off as a scholar of the 1930s of Roosevelt's New Deal. And of course, one of the questions always has been, was she on a spy mission for Roosevelt? Was there involvement in the government? And I know my way around the archive at the Roosevelt Library in Hyde Park, and I never found anything or really expected there to be anything that was the equivalent of a smoking gun. So that was my first experience with sort of realizing that anybody who expects there to be definitive answers coming out of a release of government documents is likely to be disappointed. Having said that, I was actually very surprised when. And I know we're not talking politics, but when I was expecting the Epstein files to be released, and instead it was, wait for it, Amelia Earhart. And I did get a little chuckle out of that, and I suspect you did too.
I did. Yeah,
And
wrong E, wrong last name with the E's. But yeah, he I was very, very surprised when they just made the announcement that they were going to release the files. I know a lot of people within the Earhart case were talking about it, and you can't help but wonder what's in the files. And now you're sort of on the precipice of finding out after all these years. And there are people in this case that have put hundreds and hundreds of FOIA requests in only to be denied. And now what's behind that FOIA wall now? What's going to be released? And so it's been interesting. The first set of documents, not a whole lot of interesting, compelling things in there, just some more detail, the Ontario's log and some of the detailed high resolution scans of those things. Now, as the second batch releases, you get some more kind of more compelling stuff, some a little bit more Japanese capture stuff and Japanese involvement and things, but nothing really so far that's considered a bombshell or a smoking gun, as you mentioned earlier. So I tend to agree with you. People tend to get a little overly worked up and then something releases and it's really not that big of a deal. There's really not much more context with that release than we had before the release. So it's an interesting time for sure.
No, I mean, I would love it if some treasure trove of material about Earhart that I didn't have a chance to see. Now, I wouldn't necessarily want government records. What I would love would be personal diaries or more of her correspondence with GP or, how she interacted with some of the other women pilots. And if somebody had some amazing collection that really then showed us more of the personal side, because she really didn't have that much time to be writing letters at the height of her career. And so it was a little frustrating to me that I didn't have more. Now, that kind of a source, I would be over the moon about. And I would be the first one to line up to be reading the letters and trying to see how they change what I wrote and how people are thinking about it. That's more what drew me to Earhart in the first place, which is her as a woman and as a feminist and less so about the details of her disappearance,
Yeah.
which I do believe is what we talked about on the podcast back in
Yeah.
2017.
Yeah, we sure did. Let's continue that. I mean, part of your book really covers parts of Earhart's life that were often overshadowed by the giant that is the disappearance, you know, on that side of her life. Now that all these documents are coming out, and we still don't know what's going to release, we still don't know what potential information sort of lies beneath. But as this stuff is releasing, and as maybe the picture might be changing a little bit, what do you think people should know about Amelia now in these moments?
Well, I would like them to know that there is more to her than her disappearance. And I think that has always been what drew me to the story, that we tend to look at her and think of her life through this frame of knowing that she disappeared in 1937. But at the time, there was no ending to the story.
Yeah.
And so what I am always interested in is trying to get a sense of the open-endedness of her life, of what she was actually doing, especially in this very short period of her celebrity. And it's really quite remarkable. You see it in 1928 when she's a passenger on the ship, and then less than 10 years later, she disappears. So it's all compressed together. And yet there is so much rich material in that time frame, both about her contributions to the aviation industry, to her relationships with other women pilots, to her relationship to the modern feminist movement. Remember, she is lobbying President Herbert Hoover for the Equal Rights Amendment in, I think, 1931. I think those aspects of her life, her role as a pioneering feminist and as a pioneering pilot, is what I want people to know about Amelia Earhart. The flight that I really point to is her 1932 crossing.
Yeah.
Only the second person after Lindbergh. And I really think if she hadn't been lost in 1937, that when we talked about Amelia Earhart and her significance to the history of popular culture, the history of aviation, it would be that flight that we would really be focusing on. Maybe in such detail as you do in your podcast, but there is more to her story. And that, I think, is clearly what is fueling this ongoing interest.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure she would be so thrilled about.
Agreed.
I often have a sense that she would just say, come on, leave me alone. I went down, you'll never find me. Although I must confess that one thing that has happened to me in the 30 years since I published my book is, at first I was really worried that they might find the plane because I had this great title still missing.
Yeah.
And what if I'm in print or just in production and all of a sudden they find the plane and I have to change my title?
Yeah.
What I have found since then, and as I have grown 30 some years older, is that before my sense was always just, we'll never know, leave her be. She wouldn't want us to be spending all this time trying to find her plane. But there would be a certain element of closure if we did find the plane. And I find myself wondering, will it happen in my lifetime? Will it happen in your lifetime? And what would it mean? How would that change the story?
Yeah.
So I don't know if I've ever confessed that in public before, but I'm telling you, Chris.
All right. We have it on record. I think it's natural. You know, I want to ask you a question that didn't make our 2017 interview. It was one of the ones that I had written out, but I don't know, we just ran out of time or, you know, other questions got asked. I think history has certainly painted Earhart as certainly both a feminist and this media construct, this brand. Looking back, do you see her more as, and I think I know the answer to this, do you see her more as a true activist or someone maybe that was just swept up into feminist projection at the time?
You're creating that as a binary, either or. I think it's more of a continuum. And I think she would be the first to admit that she was the beneficiary of an amazing set of circumstances starting around 1928 that gave her opportunities to do things as a person and as a woman and as a pilot that were truly remarkable. She was very aware of that. I think we also need to remember that there are aspects of the Amelia Earhart leading up to 1928, her restlessness, the way she kept the scrapbook about women pioneers. She is already thinking about ways to be a modern independent woman. She wants to live her own life. She doesn't want to marry Sam Chapman. She doesn't want to be stuck like her mother. So the seeds are there. And I think what's so interesting is just how this sudden burst of celebrity and notoriety gives her the opportunity to not only do what she loved, which was to fly, but also to be a spokesperson and a role model for what women could do in the modern world.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that she sincerely believed in and was. One of the things that I really was impressed by when I was researching her life was how she used her celebrity not just to promote herself, you know, or to make herself rich, but she was trying to use it to make a larger point.
Yeah.
A lot of it was about women's capability, but we also need to remember she was also a great spokesperson for the fledgling airline industry,
yeah.
which was just getting off
off
the
the
ground.
Ground. Yeah.
To avoid these metaphors
Yeah.
at the time. You know, I mean, people's lives change, opportunities come along, but I think she really was well situated and prepared to take advantage of what she was given.
This is a speculative question for sure, but I want to ask you a Sam Chapman question because you mentioned, you know, her not wanting to marry Sam Chapman, her not wanting to be sort of pigeonholed, you know, like her mother, or like she thought her mother might have been. Do you think she ever regretted not marrying Sam Chapman? Do you think she ever regretted not taking that life?
You know, it's really hard to tell
Yeah.
because we have so few sources that really access her inner thoughts. She's not keeping a diary. We don't have a cache of letters back and forth to Sam. I would say that she probably was ready to move on. I mean, if she had wanted to marry him, she could have. She could have just told G.P. Putnam to go away.
Yeah.
You know, I've got this guy and we're going to get married. I have to say, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Putnam, G.P. Putnam, but in some ways he was a better husband for that public stage of her career,
Sure.
the last decade.
Sure.
Than Sam would have been. And historians don't like to do counterfactual, but it is kind of hard to imagine her having the aviation career she had as Mrs. Sam Chapman
Huh.
and with all the responsibilities that that might have entailed.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
and also she's not someone that had regrets. I mean,
Yeah.
looked back. I mean, I think maybe it would have happened when it didn't. Move forward.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I agree. She isn't someone who really historically, by the things she's written, the things we know that came from her hand, had regrets. It's very true. She kind of made a decision and she went forward with that decision. And she dealt with the consequences, good or bad, of that decision. I feel like you're spot on with that. That's a good observation. Speaking of George, you know, she famously gives GP this prenup letter, essentially saying that, you know, marriage doesn't mean possession. I asked this question to Lori Shapiro. I'll ask it to you, too, because I'm very curious on how you might answer it. How radical was that stance to have in 1931?
It was totally radical. I mean, that's something that the feminist movement of the 1970s thought it had invented.
Yeah.
And here you have a woman
yeah.
basically challenging the institution of marriage and the rules as it's set up and saying, I will enter this institution, but only on my own terms. That was quite radical. And I think, again, it speaks to her sense of self and the need for her to keep herself and her independence and her life separate or at least autonomous at the same time she contemplated joining with someone else
yeah.
in marriage.
I guess that leads me to, I mean, are there parallels, do you think, that because you talked about, you know, the feminist movement in the 70s, and here's a woman, you know, roughly 40 years earlier that's making these decisions and doing these things. Are there parallels, do you think, that you can see between Amelia's moves in the 30s and maybe some of the key events that, you know, that have happened in modern times when it comes to modern feminism?
Well, for sure. That's kind of the point of my
Yeah,
book.
sure, sure.
Search for modern feminism
Yeah.
as well. You know, I think that the whole history of the women's movement and feminism over the course of the 20th century and the 21st century. This is something as a historian that I have spent my entire career looking at. And I sort of see it as a river moving forward with lots of tributaries coming into the river that are part of this story as it flows forward. And I think Amelia Earhart is part of that story, but there isn't a sort of cause and effect between what she did in 1931, 32, 31, and what happens in the 1970s. But it is part of a larger continuum of women's activism that began before Earhart. I mean, my last book was on the women's suffrage movement. And I really see that as part of a larger continuum of women's political activism over the course of really from then until now, more than 100 years.
Yeah.
And so I think she is very much part of that story. I think the whole issue of how we remember women's contribution to history and who gets forgotten and who gets remembered, it's a tricky one.
Yeah.
I just feel as a feminist biographer, I am always fighting battles to make sure that women are not forgotten or overlooked or lost.
Yeah.
That's not a problem with Amelia Earhart,
yeah,
but it is with a lot of other women. And I think that, again, what I try and do as a historian is to take individual lives and then put them in conversation with larger themes and patterns. And in my case, what I'm especially interested in is the history of modern feminism.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, in talking about that a little bit, I mean, you bring up some interesting notions. What's your take on the balance between, I mean, Earhart obviously was an exceptional woman. I say this all the time. And when I do press it, she was, 100 years ahead of her time and sitting in Purdue classes and doing the things that she was doing. What's your take on her as this exceptional woman who was just kind of the right woman at the right time versus Earhart as this larger than life now icon that, maybe the cultural needs of her time sort of shaped who she would become? Is there anything to look at there when it comes to the overall picture?
Well, I think, it goes back to how we make sense of women's history.
Yeah.
And you have these larger than life individuals. And, I can rattle off a whole list. Jane Addams, Eleanor Roosevelt, Billie Jean King.
Yeah.
They sort of are the modern faces. But then you have a much broader change going on. And in some ways, those individual women each have their own story that allows them to be who they are. I mean, Eleanor Roosevelt, who I'm doing research on right now, who would have predicted she would be the first lady that she was from this sheltered upper class background she had? But the marriage to FDR and then the 1920s and changes in her marriage, the depression, whatever, she turns into really what I would argue is the most important woman of the 20th century.
Yeah.
These women are exceptional and you need to be aware of that. But then they also are part of larger changes going on. So again, it's a balance.
Yeah.
I think part of the problem, and this is a pattern in women's history, is that sometimes you have an individual woman who rises above the discrimination and the prejudice and whatever, and she makes it, and she's the first, the first Secretary of Labor or something like Frances Perkins was. But then how do you institutionalize making sure that then there will be a second woman Secretary of Labor and a third and a fourth? And that sometimes these women are so exceptional and they seem to be so much ahead or above the crowd that they have these amazing careers. And then it doesn't necessarily translate into progress for women coming along, which means then we have to start the process all over again.
Yeah.
But I think in most cases, even if it's starting over again, you're starting at a further point. I mean, once Frances Perkins has been Secretary of Labor, once Amelia Earhart has flown the Atlantic, that's the base. And then you move forward.
Yeah. Well, and you touched on it earlier too, and it is interesting if Earhart was alive today. I think the way social media turns celebrities and names into brands, it's remarkable to kind of see how that works. Do you think Amelia would be comfortable being known as a brand today, or do you think that language would sort of be unsettling to her?
I'm sort of imagining her doing an eye roll and saying, "Oh dear." And then I'm seeing GP Putnam to the side, putting his
Going,
thumb up and saying, "Yes, this is
yes,
what we want."
right,
So
exactly.
I think she would be a perfect, the two of them
Yeah.
would be perfect in these times. And here I just have to put in a shout out to Laurie Shapiro's book, because I think she just does such a good job of telling us so much more about what GP Putnam was up to
Yeah.
and how important he was to Earhart's career, in a way that I learned a lot, and I really am grateful to her for the amazing research she did and all the people she talked to and pulling together that story, because
Yeah.
it is an important part of it.
Yeah, it really is. Well, we've talked a lot tonight about, just Earhart as a figure and just Earhart's historical significance, when it comes, certainly when it comes to modern feminism, when it comes to feminism at the time, the development of it. So it's kind of a tough question to ask, but is it really surprising to you between Earhart the icon, Earhart the woman, and everything that's gone on, the disappearance in the almost 90 years since she did her Noonan disappeared, is it really surprising that she has become such a polarizing figure when it comes to the disappearance?
No, but I've always been pretty clear that my Amelia, the Amelia I wanted to write about, was the living person, that I wasn't so interested in the disappearance.
Yeah.
And I do also need to remind you, Chris, that the world you live in is very concerned with the disappearance and the different camps and who's getting funding and who's doing what. I don't think this is the most important thing to the public at large. I mean,
I agree.
but to a certain community, it is almost a life and death. I mean, if people take it very, very seriously,
Yeah.
that in some ways does surprise me. It always has surprised me,
Yeah.
the way people really just keep re-fighting this battle or relitigating this case and trying to bring in new theories and whatever, where it's most likely that we are never going to know. But I think that's part of the appeal. It
Yeah.
is one of the greatest unsolved mysteries. And so people can come at it from all kinds of different directions. And I do think that a lot of the impetus behind some of these searches is really to look for World War II aircraft and, the remnants of the devastating war in the Pacific
Yeah.
during the 1940s. And that's not something that funders are all that interested in, but you can link it to Amelia Earhart and her disappearance, and it kind of clicks with the public, and you know that there will be stories about it. So I think she's a convenient vehicle for some other agendas, but I am also well aware of the people who really have devoted their lives to trying to figure this out
Yeah.
and raised a lot of money, spent a lot of time combing different sections of the Pacific because they don't agree where they're looking,
Right.
which always I find amusing.
Yeah.
Maybe they will find something. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder a lot about, what happens to the legacy once the disappearance part of it is solved, right? So once they, let's say they pulled her up out of the ocean tomorrow, I always wonder about the impact of that on the legacy that I care about, that you care about, that so many other people care about. I wonder if I know this isn't going to happen because my optimism, I think, won't allow me to think it will happen, but I wonder if what the impact will be on her legacy once the disappearance is resolved. I wonder what that will do to the legacy. I wonder if that will impact it negatively. I wonder if it can impact it negatively. I do have a little worry about how the what the cause and effect of that will be.
Yeah. Well, I think the way you describe it, there is a finality, which I assume you'd have, it literally would have to be finding the plane.
Sure.
And that would be quite definitive. And I think that would put an end
It
to
better.
the, it'd be hard not to.
Yeah.
But I can see other scenarios, which is sort of how it's been playing out over the last 10 years or so, where they're fragments of evidence, and it's, certain theories maybe have more support than others. And so it sort of goes back and forth. Maybe there's a consensus that emerges about what happened to her, but without the final proof of the actual plane, there will still be doubters. I mean, we know that. We know that. We've seen it. And it's still going on. But I do think it is an interesting question, one which I frankly have not thought about, how it would affect her legacy. There's always the question of, was she a good pilot or not? And that actually is tied up in the question of her disappearance. Did she run out of fuel and she's near Howland? And oh my God, if she had just had that antenna and or knew how to use the radio, she didn't have to die. Or was she really off course by, what is it, 1,600
Right,
miles?
in some cases, sure.
That definitely does affect our understanding of her as a pilot. It shouldn't really affect what she accomplished, but I think I'm just aware of the fragility of all historical memory and what we know. And to me, as a historian, I am very worried about losing a sense of the important figures, Amelia Earhart, Eleanor Roosevelt, Jane Addams, and a lot of men too, because we just don't know our history. It's not just a question of how we remember this pioneering aviator from the 1930s, but how do we remember the 30s? How do we remember that part of American history? And so I think it's part of that larger, sometimes it seems like a case of historical amnesia where people really don't know these names. Now, the only good thing about that is then it sets the stage for feminist historians and biographers like me to keep rediscovering these women and then bringing them to the fore again and saying, hey, look, did you know that this woman? I frankly cannot imagine a scenario where Amelia Earhart is so forgotten that some Susan Ware 50 years from now writes a book and says, missing no longer. Why don't we know more, about Amelia Earhart? Because I think she has cemented herself pretty securely in popular culture and memory that that won't happen. That I think is something that's quite unique to her. I can't think of too many other figures, male or female, that I would say that about.
That's an excellent point. All right, last question of the night. Everything that's gone on in the last couple of months, the release of the files, Earhart being in more, even more so into the public consciousness, the public realm, sort of, she's in your face, she's kind of everywhere right now. Is the sudden push for transparency just unilaterally, is it overdue?
I think it's a good thing. I mean, why not? We want to know as much as we can. And if there are sources that have not been available that now will be available that can help us paint a fuller picture of her life and her disappearance, then yes, that is a wonder. It's a very positive thing. At the same time, I think we need to be mindful that there will always be gaps. There will always be questions. This is true not of Amelia Earhart's life. It's true of any life of a historical figure where we really, there are things we cannot know. And then what I try and do as a historian and a biographer is to craft a narrative with what we have and make the life seem real and whole. So in that sense, the more documents, the better. But I think as we're finding, and Laurie Shapiro's book is a good example of that, there is still room for more books about Amelia Earhart. I was delighted to see her book come out and get the attention that it did. I learned a lot from that book, especially about G.P. Putnam, but also about the transport license that seemed like there was a little hanky-panky there. That's part of what the process of history and biography, that each generation asks new questions, or someone, a scholar, comes to the topic with new questions. And for Shapiro, it has always been trying to unlock the relationship between Earhart and Putnam. Look where that took her. It gave us a lot of new things.
Yeah.
But someone 10 years from now may have a different take, and then they'll build on Laurie's book, but maybe have a different interpretation. And that's how history works. I really do think Amelia Earhart will continue to be a fascinating subject,
Yeah.
as I found her, as you found her, and people will continue. And whether they find the plane or not, I think that she will still speak to us in the years to come. And wouldn't it be fun to be having this conversation 30 years from now and see where where things have gone? I have no idea.
Yeah.
But 30 years ago, would I have thought I'd be having this conversation now? Not so. It's not going to go away. And thank goodness for that.
Yeah, I agreed with you. Well, the book is still missing, Amelia Earhart and the Search for Modern Feminism. It's, in my opinion, and this is not an ego stroke, it's one of the seminal pieces that have been put out. Everyone I've ever talked to that's read it loves it, and we will have it linked in the show's notes for tonight. Susan, thank you for doing this. I appreciate you coming back years later and having this conversation with me. It's been enlightening.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I am really proud to have been part of this at the beginning, and I appreciate your having me back now. It makes me feel part of a larger ongoing conversation. Let's keep in touch.
Absolutely. This is Chris Williamson, and thank you for listening to this episode of Chasing Earhart. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media, where we post each new episode as it airs, news, show information, and group discussion. Go to facebook.com/ChasingEarhart, and on Twitter and Instagram, search the handle @ChasingEarhart. Reviews are crucial to the show. If you enjoyed this episode, please head to Apple Podcasts to rate us and leave us a review. It really does help get the word out. Your editor and host for Chasing Earhart is me, Chris Williamson. The show is produced by my wife, Vanessa Williamson, with music by Dane Jarrus Schmidt. The opinions on Chasing Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Madhouse Films Incorporated. Madhouse Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All clips and audio used in the podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purposes of historical entertainment and education, and no infringement is ever intended. Chasing Earhart is an exclusive trademark of Madhouse Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Madhouse Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. Chasing Earhart is a Madhouse Films production. All rights reserved.